This is a page out of a book called Notes to Myself by Hugh Prather, which I got at a bookstore for $2.50. One kind of lie that I tell pops out in conversation and takes me by surprise. Sometimes I like to correct these lies right on the spot, and when I do, I find that most people don't think less of me. This kind of lie, when I notice it, usually helps me to see where I feel inadequate, the areas where I could be more acceptant of myself. Another kind of lie I tell begins when I think I can foresee the consequences of something I have done. I then start having fantasies about how I am going to explain things. I've noticed that if these fantasies go unobserved, they tend to convince a part of me that things happened more advantageously than they really did, and I end up telling a lie, half believing it to be true. But if I become aware of these fantasies, I can do something that interrupts this pattern. I can get very clear in my mind what did happen and what I would say if I wanted to tell the truth. I find that just doing this much sometimes takes a persistent effort. However, after doing this, I usually want to tell the truth. And if I don't tell the truth, I feel much better about lying. So, Notes to Myself is it's very didactic. It's one page dispatches about this guy's perspective on life. And normally I don't like this kind of didactic, this is what I do, this is how to do it, but he's got wisdom. I think that's the big issue with didactic prose is how much thought has this person put into what he or she is saying. Sometimes it's nice to just listen to people and not be told rather than shown, right? That's what this book sort of violates in a way, in is that he's telling me things, not showing me or telling me a story about it. But because he has insight, I do want to hear what he has to think rather than having him mask it in a metaphor or story, even though typically that's not what you want to do. I would know because I tell not show, don't show all the time in this book that I'm writing. And I'm deep in the writing process of it, so I haven't really thought much about marketing. And the reason that I had this guest on the podcast was because the request that he sent to be on this podcast was more seamless than any request I had ever received. And I pretty immediately said yes. So we talk about that a bit. He is a professional marketer, and he just wrote a book, which we talk about in this podcast, but I very quickly realized, oh no, like this is, you're a marketer. This is what you are incredibly good at. And I don't care who you are or what idea you are working on, what business you're working on. Thinking about how you're going to share that idea in a systematic way is important. Otherwise, a really good idea could die without anyone really knowing about it. I think the good news is that for an idea to spread, even still with all the, you know, marketing tricks in the tool bag, the idea still needs to be good. Otherwise, it will just fizzle and die because no one will say, hey, you should read this book, you should check out this painter, you should go to this bakery. I think that we still live in a world where one of the most powerful forms of currency is friends telling you what is good and what is not good. So marketing can only take you so far. But where I think this guy Nick's brilliance really is in that initial push. How do you get your idea out in that initial push? And then if the idea is good enough, people will spread it for you. So we talk a lot about that in this podcast. And I hope that it is applicable for you. You can get in touch with me. You can read more of my writing at tierman.substack.com. That's where I have my newsletter. That's where all these podcasts are posted. It's where you can comment. And that's all it. Tierman.substack.com. And here's Nick's bio. Nick Hutchinson is the founder of BookThinkers, a thriving seven-figure marketing agency bridging authors and readers. In just over 7 years, he has cultivated a platform reaching over 1 million people monthly and hosts the top 2% of global podcasts. BookThinkers, Life-Changing Books, features interviews with renowned authors like Grant Cardone and Lewis Howes. Nick's platform and services have empowered countless authors to reach millions of readers, driving substantial revenue growth. His services encompass video production, podcast booking, and social media brand building. With a mission to inspire readers to take action, Nick authored Rise of the Reader, delving into mastering reading habits and applying newfound knowledge to unlock your potential. All right, everyone, put your marketing glasses on and see if any of these ideas may be applicable to your own dream project. Please welcome to the podcast, Nick Hutchinson.
Kyle Tierman here. I'm in Cape Town.
I was the only journalist in northern Nigeria.
It's not an adventure until you get lost in Tijuana.
If you get caught inside by a giant wave, you feel really alone.
I love the adventure of waking up and not knowing what will happen and that being my job.
I'm standing at a desert oasis right now.
A lot of tourists don't see this part of Bali.
Smiles and thumbs up.
I love the idea for your book. Congratulations. Was this your first book?
It is. Yes.
Nice. Okay. And it's a gift that keeps on giving, because if you read this book, you'll just keep reading more and more faster and faster and retain more and more. How'd you get the idea for the book?
Well, I have a community online, mostly on Instagram, of about 150,000 nonfiction book lovers. And so over the years, hundreds of people, maybe even more, maybe 1,000 people have reached out to me and asked me questions about the reading process. How do I get more from the books I'm reading? How do I take effective notes? What are some reading strategies for scheduling it into my calendar? How do I take better action from the books I'm reading? And of course, I'm answering everybody, right? I'm of service to as many people as I can be. But I felt like I was always underserving them. I had never actually defined my own process, how to translate information into action and tangible results, behavior change. And so that's why I decided to write it.
Nice. Were you a reader from a young age?
No, absolutely not. I was more of the athlete stereotype, a little bit less of the academic growing up. And so you probably could not have paid me to read a book up until about the age of 20, 21.
What sports did you play?
In high school, I was a football player and I was captain of our wrestling team. So those were the two sports that I focused on. And still to this day, about 10 years later, I'm still playing basketball on a weekly basis, once or twice a week. So I'm definitely a sports nut. What about you? Did you play growing up?
I did. Yeah. I was and still am a big surfer.
Cool.
And similarly, I did not fall in love with reading until a later age. I always loved movies and I always loved stories, and I always had a pretty good memory, so I could recite back lines from movies. But my parents similarly just could not pay me to sit still and read a book. Was there a particular book that hooked you and took you down the rabbit hole in your love of reading?
Yeah. So the backstory takes a couple of minutes, but I'll do my best to be brief. So going into my senior year of college, I went to the University of New Hampshire. Going into my senior year, I took an internship at a local software company. And when I started at that job, my boss, Kyle, he was the director of sales.
It's a great
he
name.
Said something a lot. Yeah, great name. I agree. I owe a lot to the Kyles in my life. Kyle said something to me like, listen, dude, I know you're commuting an hour each way. Listening to the same playlist or radio station is not going to get you closer to where you want to be in life, but the right personal development podcast might. And so I started listening to business podcasts, personal development shows, shows just like this, where a host would interview a series of guests and the guests would tell their story and oftentimes what they did to become successful. And what I realized commuting hour each way every single day for an entire summer was that so many of the people that I wanted to be like, they were giving at least some credit for their success to the books that they had read and were reading. And so I just kind of had this moment where I thought, man, if I deliberately choose not to read these books, then I'm deliberately choosing to live under my potential. And that's not cool. Nobody wants to die with a bunch of regrets having lived half the life they could have. And so I went to my local Barnes and Noble. I grabbed a handful of books. And the book that changed everything for me was book number one. And that was Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You said that there were some podcasts that you were listening to. Were there any? We're part of the podcast generation. You know, people who come into our lives who we've never met, but may have a greater influence on us than our fathers or mothers.
True.
Was there a particular thinker that really you found resonated with you and a person who just doesn't matter what podcast they would come on, you had to listen to what they would say?
Yes. And he hosts his own podcast. His name is Tim Ferriss. And, you know, I love to tell people that Tim is like my spirit animal or something. I mean, he has no idea who I am, but yeah, I've listened to so many shows where he's been interviewed and so many shows where he's the interviewer, and I've read his books, and he's just such a great thinker.
Mm. Yeah. I think that he has captured the minds of a lot of young people and is so useful in the advice that he gives. What is it that you like about Tim?
I love that he is a guinea pig. He's not afraid to experiment on his own body, whether it's some extreme form of fasting or it's something related to his business or personal life. He's just willing to try things out. He has this insatiable curiosity. He just wants to get more from life. And I admire that. He's very logical, not very emotional, takes time to process things, speaks with intention. And I think what I admire about him the most, you know, now that I have my own podcast and business and book coming out, is that Tim's an average dude. Like, you wouldn't see him in a grocery store and think anything other than that's an average dude. But for the right person who recognizes him, he's probably transformed that person's life. And so, you know, he's rich and famous, but he's only famous to the people that he's positively impacted. And that's also really admirable.
You mentioned that you, was it a coach who said that you should be listening to these podcasts? You said this will help you get to where you want to get to in life. Who was that person again?
Yeah. So Kyle was the director of sales at the company that I was interning at.
Right. And where did you want to get to in life at that point?
Yeah. At that time, I wanted to be a businessman, and I didn't really know what that meant. I was at a business school. Everybody was talking about how much money they were going to make after college, the companies they were working for, the things that they were going to invest in. And so I wanted to be part of that mix. I didn't quite know what that looked like yet. I mean, I had a little bit of a rebellious nature. I had run my own house painting business in college for 2 summers. I hired all my buddies and we crushed it, made a bunch of money. But I realized that I was my own bottleneck in 1,000 different ways. And I needed to go work for somebody else, I think, first to become more attractive to another employer, but also as a way to accelerate my own learning. And I wanted to get into the world of business and sales and make a bunch of money. And I think back then, what was most impressive to me was financial success. Nowadays, when I look at somebody who is financially successful, but they're not healthy and they don't have great relationships, they're not impressive to me anymore. But I think back then, 20 years old, that's all I cared about.
Mm. So you started reading, and then you started developing skills to be able to read better in whatever way that means to you. So if I were to come to you and say, Nick, I want to read better, what does that mean to you? What does reading better mean to you?
Well, reading is a skill set, just like playing golf is a skill set. And so it's something that can be managed and improved. It can be measured. But, you know, kind of like taking a step back real quick, one of the first things I started to recognize as I built my community and as I started to implement books is that people oftentimes they read without intention. So this is one of my favorite tips. I'll meet somebody. I'll say, hey, Kyle, what are you reading? You'll tell me. I'll say, why? And oftentimes I'm just met with a blank stare. Like, what do you mean? Why? Well, why are you reading the books you're reading? You have to define an intention or a goal for each book. So when I'm reading, I like to set a SMART goal. My goal for each book, specific, it's measurable, it's attainable, meaning it's realistic, it's relevant to my life or my business or a pain that I'm experiencing. So I'm emotionally connected to it, and it's time bound. So one of the books that I started recently, $100 Million Leads by Alex Hormozi, popular book, everybody's reading it in the kind of world of business, but they're reading it without intention. You see, my intention for the book is to find and implement at least two new lead generation strategies for my business by the end of the month. So that's specific, it's measurable. I know whether or not the book achieved its goal. That's attainable. I didn't say I wanted to generate $1 million using his format. I just said find and implement two things. It's relevant to my business because we're growing, but we kind of stink at lead gen. And then it's time bound. I said by the end of the month. And so I'm far more likely to take action, realistic action on that book by setting a goal and then writing that goal on the inside cover so that my brain can filter for those actions as I'm reading. I review that intention each time I dive into the book. Okay. So those are just, you know, a couple of examples for how I think we could start this process and how people can get more. It's by reading with intention.
Right. Yeah. Everyone needs a why. I think that there's a lot of science around improving any skill and creating intention and stakes around it allows your brain to retain those neural pathways, because it was said that in early hunter-gatherer days, let's say that you needed to find water and you needed the path to find that water and you found it, because there were such great stakes tied to that necessary retention of information, it would form that new neural pathway. But if you just do something like, okay, I'm going to sit down and read this book, but you have no idea why, your reptilian brain, you know, that we're still here with from tens of thousands of years ago, does not know that it needs to remember that, and thus it will make space for something else. So yeah, I think that's really smart, having a deep why for going into anything, including reading.
Absolutely. And I mean, let's think about the purpose of these books. They solve pain, help us overcome problems, or they help us develop skill sets. There are some other buckets in between, but your intention is either to solve an issue that you're dealing with, or it's to develop a skill that gets you closer to where you want to be. And so if you can remind yourself of that, define a goal, revisit that goal as often as possible so that your brain can filter for the right actions to take, the reticular activating system in your brain can filter for, oh, that's the action I'm supposed to implement, rather than just hoping the book is going to fall down from the heavens and smack you in the head and, you know, and tell you exactly what to do to change your life. So yeah, intention is so important. And then on the back end of that process, let's say I'm reading $100 million leads. And by the time I finish that book, I have 15 potential actions. That's not realistic action, right? My goal is to find and implement two, maybe three things. And so I look at that list, I rewrite it, because rewriting it is a form of repetition. Repetition leads to retention because you're strengthening that neural connection. And then I'm going to analyze that list. I'm going to say, oh, here are my 15 potential actions. Well, actions are not all created equally. Some Tim Ferriss knowledge here, 80-20. What 20% of these might lead to 80% of the desired change that I'm looking to make and that I can take action on within the time frame I've given, you know, the deadline that I have. And so that's what I'll take action on. And that's how I get more from these books. I'm very specific and I limit my action because I know I'm more likely to achieve it that way.
And do you write down this stuff by hand? Do you make these lists by hand because it allows you to retain it better, or so the scientists say.
Yes, I do. And then I do rewrite some of my favorite takeaways into an online notebook as well, Evernote, because I, again, that's another form of repetition. And it's easier for me to access that on multiple devices in situations where I might need to review notes on negotiation before I walk into a car dealership or something like that.
Okay. I want to get a couple more tips on reading, but I also want people to go check out your book. So you don't need to give away the whole book right here. Is there another quick one that you would give for someone who just said, "Hey, I want to get better at reading"? What's a really high level habit I can work on? Let's just get one more in there.
Yeah, I say schedule reading time into your calendar. And it doesn't have to be a ton of time. So check out the following math. If you replace 15 minutes of your morning Instagram scrolling and the first 15 minutes of your evening Netflix or HBO or whatever with reading a great book, that's 30 minutes a day. For somebody who's brand new to the space, 30 minutes of reading translates to about 20 pages. If you could do that Monday through Friday, give yourself a break on the weekends, Monday through Friday, that's 100 pages a week. Most of these books, I mean, nowadays, they average about 200 pages. That's a book every 2 weeks. So reading does not have to be this overwhelming major shift in your identity. It can be something you do for 15 minutes in the morning and 15 minutes in the evening. And that little 1% shift, it can lead to a dramatic impact over time. So I definitely think scheduling reading time is a really important thing to do as well.
Mm-hmm. So I've read Speed Reading, How to Read 200 Pages in an Hour. And the author of that also recommends setting this intention. And I assume that through the work that you're doing in this book, you're gathering a lot of best practices from other people. I don't know if you got that idea from that book. How many best practices in this book have you found you have borrowed from other thinkers, and how many have you developed just experimenting yourself through trial and error to come up with the best possible information for this book?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm sure in some way, shape, or form, 100% of what I've put into this book has come from external resources, whether I'm aware of it or not. I've consumed hundreds and hundreds of books, hundreds of podcast interviews, courses, all sorts of things. And so not much of what I have in here is original, I would guess, but what's original is I'm organizing it in the structure that I'm organizing it, right? You know, when you think of somebody like Ryan Holiday repurposing ancient Stoic philosophy and ancient journals and texts into something new and modern, it's kind of what I'm trying to do here. I haven't studied a lot of speed reading or reading, you know, technique learning type books. But what I did do was I observed my own behavior from a third-party perspective. And I said, what the heck is Nick Hutchison doing to successfully read and implement these books? And then I would try to put pen to paper and define exactly what was happening. And so I do think some of it could be original to me. I'll give you an example. What I realized, so I was in that internship. I took a full-time job with that company out of college, and I worked with them for a number of years while I was developing Book Thinkers on the side. And each time I would sell one of these B2B software packages, the company that I would sell it to would go through an implementation period. And if they didn't, they would fail. If they did successfully go through that implementation period, their business would transform and they would start leveraging the software. And so very early on, I think I just started mimicking that process in my own life. When I read a book, it would go through an implementation period, take a couple of weeks or a couple of months to fully implement and test what the author was telling me. I wanted to be like Tim, right? I wanted to be a guinea pig. Oh, this book tells me I could get better leads. Let me try it out and see if it actually works.
I hope Tim has you on his podcast.
I'm sending
you good positive vibes so that you can meet face to face and tell him what kind of impact he's had on your life. That's super cool. Yeah, and just to clarify that question and thought, I think that so often valuable information can come from recapitulating information and repackaging it and making it more digestible. You know, I think that just as often the messenger is just as important as the message. And it's a lot of these same insights and thoughts remixed and redone, and they can still provide a ton of use. So just to clarify that, I think that it can still be incredibly valuable for you to talk about this through the filter of your own experience and yes. your own story, because people might relate to you more than they would relate to someone who wrote a similar book 100 years ago.
Yeah, 10,000%. And I actually write about a process of creating novelty. And I call it book sex. James Altucher calls it idea sex. You take two totally unrelated things from two totally unrelated books, you mash them together, and you journal about what it would look like if you combine the ideas. So let's say you're reading about intermittent fasting and you're reading about effective delegation or something. What if you mashed them together and you had intermittent delegation, where you only delegated tasks once a week instead of throughout the week? What would that look like for your business? Oh, now you're not task switching. Maybe it's more efficient. So you never know. It's another reason why I think people should read multiple books at the same time and kind of cross-pollinate after you're done with them. So yeah, it creates novelty when you regroup and you rematch and you rework.
Mm. You said that you used yourself as a guinea pig with a lot of these new strategies and habits. And I think that takes a certain amount of self-awareness and reflection to even know, you know, it takes looking in the mirror to know that you have food on your face, so to speak. And what practices would you do to kind of figure out, oh, hey, this is really working for me? Creating a deeper why before I start this book allowed me to retain a lot more of that information. What would you do to assess what was working and what was not working as you tried to become a better reader?
Yeah, I'll say two things. I'll answer this from two totally different perspectives. On one hand, I've spent a lot of time over the last 7 or 8 years meditating. So learning how to be with my own thoughts, learning how to observe my own behavior from a third-party perspective, how to increase the time between an input to my brain and my reaction to it, to process with logic instead of react with emotion. And so I think I've created a lot of space and awareness in my own life, which then lends itself to being able to observe my own behavior with a little bit more awareness, kind of the food on your face metaphor with the mirror. The other way that I'll answer this is, I've developed an activity tracking system where everything that I do is measured. And it sounds a little bit crazy, this quantified lifestyle, but I'll remind everybody of Jocko's great line, discipline equals freedom. When you do measure, you can manage. That's a Peter Drucker thing. So if you're not measuring your activity and you don't have a baseline understanding of how effective something is for you, then it's hard to know whether or not a new kind of take on it is positive or negative. So that activity tracker that I manage has all sorts of mechanisms built into it, functions built into it to know whether or not something is effective and whether or not it's creating a positive outcome for me. So for instance, you could look at A/B testing 10 books using both methods, and you could determine whether or not, you know, which outcome feels better, which outcome is leading to more tangible results. And I know for a fact that when I read a book with intention, I define a specific goal for it. Then I take the most important, highest leveraged activities from the book, plug them into my activity tracker, measure my progress, and then determine whether or not, based on feedback, I should keep it in my calendar because it's creating an improvement for me. Like, that process works compared to just not doing any of it, you know?
Sure. Yeah, it is better than just blindly blundering along. I agree. I think that you can add a little bit of organization to your life, and it can give way to a lot more creativity. I think that when people get a bad taste in their mouth when they hear things like quantifying their life, they're not really asking, okay, what's next after this, which is often more time to do the things that you want to do, whether that's painting or traveling or reading more books, So I think that if you're, you know, asking the why behind quantifying is a really smart thing to do. And I do think also the reason why people have a hard time with that is that there's a lot of myopia in optimization, and it's a lot of people who just want to get six packs and $1 billion because they never felt love from their mother and really they should go see a therapist, which in some cases is true, but in other cases, it can be so damn effective to get your life together and create the art that matters most to you.
Yeah, when I was first starting Book Thinkers and really starting to invest time in reading and implementing these books, I received some judgment from friends and family, and I think they had good intentions, but they were like, why are you working so much? Why are you focused so much on X number of steps per day or a certain type of sleep score? And what's funny is here I am, I'm 29 years old, and I feel like I have all the freedom in my life to do whatever I want. My wife and I have traveled to 25 different countries, sometimes for up to 3 months at a time. And it's like, I'm having more fun than the people who criticize me for not having fun. It's kind of backwards, but the more you focus on discipline and quantification or quantifying your behavior, like the more freedom you can create to do the things that bring more joy. And yeah, it is. It's backwards. I feel like society has it backwards a lot of times.
Yeah. One thing that I wanted to ask you about is the marketing of this book, because I get inbound requests by people who want to come on as guests on my podcast quite often. And I would say that 98% of the time, I don't respond to the email because so often those podcasts just suck. I don't like the feeling of people recommending themselves on a podcast. I find that often they're sort of half baked, like, oh, I really want to do this, but then they come on and they haven't really thought about what they want to talk about. And to be honest, when someone sends an inbound request, I'm a little bit harder on them. I'm a little bit like, all right, you better bring it because you requested to come on this show, rather than me reaching out to someone else. And you requested to come on this show, and I believe it was, I forget the name of the person who actually requested upon your behalf,
James, but I was
really impressed with the way the email was crafted, and then subsequently how streamlined it was to set it up with you, because as a podcast host, I'm just looking for good audio. Like at the end of the day, it's like, I want to talk to someone who I think is interesting, and I want it to be a media asset that the listeners enjoy. And as easy as someone can make it on me to help make that possible, then all of a sudden you're doing me a favor. So I just wanted to kind of go through what that process was like with you. And how, if someone else wants to come on this podcast, maybe they could model your request. Cause I was very impressed with the way you went about it, and I ended up saying yes. And here we are having a great conversation.
Yeah. Well, this is the first time talking about this, but I love that. Well, thank you for the compliment on the process and the ask. I have a couple of things to say. Number one, my company, Book Thinkers, I have 10 people on my team. We serve hundreds of authors a year, and we help them promote and market their books. And one of the services that we provide is podcast booking. So as a podcast host myself, who's interviewed a lot of big names, just like you, we get a lot of inbound requests, and most requests stink. There's generic 15 paragraphs of credentials and background info and book summary info, and maybe they've customized your name at the beginning of the email or something, and it just doesn't feel exciting. It feels transactional. There's no opportunity to build a relationship, and it's bad. So when we started to do this for our authors, I think principle number one is to be a surgeon with your words. Surgeons don't make extra cuts while performing surgery. Right? That's unnecessary. And salespeople shouldn't use extra language when selling. So I think that's kind of number one. And we do try to personalize each request, demonstrate that we're here to try to provide value, that I think I have something of value to offer your audience that's different, that's new, that's engaging, that's based on my experience. And by the way, I'm the right person to deliver it. I'm credible, but I don't need to tell you that over 15 paragraphs. I can tell you that in a much shorter period of time. So yeah, it cuts through a little bit. And the same thing, I would say the same thing to you, Kyle, when reaching out to guests. You know, I've interviewed a lot of the people that I set out to interview, you know, the Cardones and PBDs and Hormozis of the world. And the reason that they all come on our podcast is because our reach outs are very similar. We say, congratulations on the upcoming release of your book. Give a little bit of positivity. We interview people like, and then insert three names that they follow, the biggest names that we've got. So they can bypass the due diligence process and say, oh, wow, he's spending time with X, Y, and Z. I should spend time with him too. Trust is transitive. If you trust Hormozy and you know that he values his time and he trusts me, you're more likely to trust me too. And then just the ease of booking piece is kind of the second principle. It's, you know, if we're recommending me for a podcast, it's here's the link to book Nick on your show. And if we're recommending for somebody to come on our show, an author, we say, here's a link to book a time that works for you. That's it. That's the whole process. You know, I think sometimes people oversimplify, I mean, they overcomplicate it quite a bit.
Yeah. No, so we booked through, was it Calendly?
Calendly.
Calendly. Yeah. Calendly. Yeah. I've used that a couple times just with like, I know that a lot of like coaches and therapists use that, but I had never had it booked with a podcast guest, and to have your available times right there and then in the link have a few things that we could potentially talk about was the easiest, most streamlined setup I've ever had.
And you've had hundreds of interviews, right?
I'll tell you, I mean, this is like maybe a little too inside baseball, but like the back and forth of when you want to do it through like text message and email. Well, are you available at this time? Are you available? Da, da, da. It burns calories and it makes it harder to do, to the point where if I'm not that excited about the interview, I mean, maybe it's just laziness. I'll be like, it's just not, it makes the whole process take longer, which makes my excitement about saying yes, less exciting. So yeah, I mean, I'm taking it. I'm midway through writing my first book and I'm stealing the shit out of that strategy when I get into the marketing phase.
Good. Yes. As you should.
Yeah. Other aspects of the, I know that, you know, another thing that I thought was really smart is that we're releasing this podcast in November, if I'm correct, because yes, that's the release of your book. So the idea is that your name is going to come up on the feed of a lot of different podcasts all around the same month, and it's going to feel like a real cultural media event. So I just wanted to underscore that I think that was also a very intelligent way to do the marketing of this book that you're writing.
I mean, as you know, with podcasts, it's much easier if somebody asks you to delay the interview than it is to skip the line and get it out next week. And so, yeah, that was part of our strategy. I'd like to have over 100 podcasts go live in the month of November. So every day, a few people are hitting the streets with a new show. And yeah, you get that feeling of omnipresence. If you can execute it like that. And so that's actually a service that BookThinkers, my business, can provide to authors. And, you know, we have never done it to this scale before, but it's working and we're having fun with it. It's a time commitment to show up to all of these interviews, but I think that the result is going to be really important. And by the way, every single interview is different. And that's, I give credit to somebody like you. You're asking questions about this process. It's my first time talking about it on a podcast. So everything is new and different. And I think everybody can get a little bit of a different perspective if they choose to listen to multiple shows and then make their purchasing decision for the book.
Hmm. When did you start? Give me the timeline of when you finished this book and when you started marketing for this book.
Best practice would have been a little bit different than what I'm going to admit here, but I started writing the book 3 years ago and I just couldn't get it done. There's a little bit of imposter syndrome. There's a little bit of perfectionism. And there was also a little bit of, it just wasn't high enough on the priority list for me. But what I did was I set a date like 4 or 5 months ago. I just said, November 1st is the launch date. Now let's force all of this activity into the next 4 or 5 months. And that's when I started the marketing. I said to my team, they were like chomping at the bit. They were like, when can we book you on shows? And I said, not yet, not yet, not yet. And then once I let them loose and it worked out. I wish I started that process a little bit earlier. I wouldn't have such a dense, you know, promotion schedule like I do right now. But yeah, I think 4 or 5 months of pre-sale. There's a bunch of other things other than podcasting that I'm focusing on, but podcasting is a big piece of it because I think a long form conversation is an excellent way for an audience to get to know you and the meaning behind the book. It's much better than like a quick social media promotion or something.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a buddy of mine, Adam Skolnick, on this podcast. He's a writer. He was a Lonely Planet journalist for a long time. He ghost wrote David Goggins' books with David. Mm-hmm. They worked on those projects together, and he had written 2 books prior to that. And he said, if I were to do it all over again, I would have only focused on podcasts for promotion. And he's legit. He knows what he's talking about by this point.
Yeah, so I've connected with him a little bit. He's amazing.
Yeah. Adam's great. What are some other aspects to the marketing of this book that you have been focusing on?
We just launched a pre-order campaign. So one lucky person who pre-orders a copy of my book and submits their receipt is going to win a full home library, over 500 physical books being shipped to them. So one US winner gets 500 physical books, a full home library full of the best personal development books out there. And one international winner gets $1,000 Amazon gift card. So the idea is, if you're interested in buying this book, you might win a bunch of other books or a bunch of money at the same time. So that's an example of another marketing tactic. Because I live in the world of Bookstagram, you know, of online book marketing, I'm having a ton of other pages that promote books post about mine within that launch month as well. So again, creating that feeling of omnipresence for podcasting, but also for social media. And then my company also helps authors turn their books into short form video content for social media. It's another service that we provide. And so I just went through that with my whole team. And for the next essentially 5 weeks, we'll be posting a couple pieces of video content per day. And that short form video content, it all follows the same sort of viral potential format. So a strong hook to grab attention. You know, here are 3 ways you can improve your reading comprehension. And the third one might surprise you. Retaining that viewer through the video, telling the platform this is valuable content, and then the call to action around engaging with that piece of content so that it can get that viral momentum. So we'll be doing a whole bunch of that. So yeah, those are a couple of the strategies. I mean, there's so many. I think word of mouth, you know, baking in, by the way, I just got my first copy, physical test copy of the book today. But baking in
a typo on the cover. Sorry.
Oh no! What is it?
Just kidding.
Heart attack, real quick. Yeah. I'll share one last one, which I think is fun. Somebody told me this at one point, and I totally stole it. But they said to me, "It's funny when," and you could use this for your own book too. It's funny when somebody quotes Marcus Aurelius in one of their books, because Marcus Aurelius can't promote your book. But Ryan Holiday can. And so why quote somebody who can't help you when you could quote somebody that could help you? It's an entirely different set of opportunities. And so I was really conscious of that. You know, I didn't want to quote people in my book. I mean, I did a couple of times, but where I could, I would quote somebody who is more relevant, who is alive today, who's capable of sharing my book and create a little bit of word of mouth virality. And so there's all sorts of like little tips and tricks like that, replacing dead people with alive people and, you know, tons of little ways to think about it.
Yeah, it's kind of an opposite way to think about it, because I think a lot of writers quote dead people or very old people because it makes them seem more wise. You quote Marcus Aurelius, like, whoa, this guy's a stoic. But yeah, to your point, yeah, it's if it's a good book, it's an honor to be quoted in it. Yes. And it makes people feel good. So I know that I've followed Book Thinkers, and I think it's a really cool Instagram page that you guys do. What have been some of the primary kind of pillars and philosophies that you use in developing and growing that page and continuing to provide stuff that's not perfunctory, that people really want to come back to? Because I find that so many Instagram pages just, they start out cool and then they kind of just devolve into this kind of spiral of shitty content, because the algorithm told you to do it once, and then all of a sudden you alienate your base, and it's a bunch of girls shaking their asses with maybe a book on the back. So I just find that often with brands, their values can sort of go by the wayside, and they'll kind of forget why they started. And then all of a sudden, you know, 3 years down the road, it's just shitty, and it doesn't work. So what have you guys done to kind of maintain that brand strength and value to people who want to give you their time and attention?
Oof. Do you have an hour? Because this is one of my favorite subjects, and there are so many different angles to approach it.
I think we got about 20 minutes. So have at it. I'm glad we're getting into some new stuff here. That's one thing I pride myself on, is we got to go down some alleyways we haven't trodden quite yet in other podcasts.
Yeah. Well, I'll give a couple of growth strategies, and then I'll talk about the brand integrity piece. So when I first started my page, it was no different than anybody else. I had no following. Nobody knew who I was. And I just started posting book reviews. And then I stumbled across a Gary Vee post where he talked about the $1.80 strategy. Have you heard of this? Are you familiar with it?
No.
Okay. You're going to love it. This is good for platforms like Instagram. So have you ever heard of the saying, your 2 cents, right? You're just your opinion, your thought, your 2 cents. So Gary says you need to go out into the world of Instagram, search hashtags related to your target follower, your target content, and then leave your 2 cents, like a genuine piece of feedback on trending posts. So a couple of things happen. Number one, if you leave a genuine comment, something thick, a couple of sentences long on somebody's page, not, hey, follow me, but you're responding to what they're posting about, that comment will sit at the top of their comment section for new people as they're checking it out. And they'll be like, oh, wow, this is an interesting take. New people will check it out, but also the person that posted that, they'll be like, hey, this guy Kyle just left like 3 full sentences on my post. Let me go check out his profile. And Robert Cialdini talking about the law of reciprocity, like people want to reciprocate. Everyone's insecure about their comment section. So if you leave a nice juicy comment out of the middle of nowhere, they're going to reciprocate by either commenting on your stuff or following you if you're providing consistent value on your page. By searching hashtags related to your target follower and commenting on their posts, you're also attracting the right type of follower, somebody who's creating cool content, who is engaging in the first place, and you're already filtering for the right type of person because you're searching that hashtag. So for me, I would search things like hashtag rich dad, poor dad, hashtag thinking grow rich, hashtag whoever, Robert Cialdini. And I started to attract a lot of people like that. I was also liking all of the other comments in that comment section. So everybody's just getting a nice little notification. By the way, they're my target follower. They're commenting on stuff related to the same stuff I'm posting already. Another interesting thing happens when you do this, which is if you comment on 90 posts per day, 10 hashtags, the top 9 trending pieces on each hashtag, that's your $1.80, 2 cents per post. You're consuming 90 pieces of trending content in your niche per day. And as that develops over time, you consume thousands of pieces of content. You can, like Austin Kleon would say, steal like an artist. You can start to recreate the stuff that you know is working for other people. That same activity is how I went from 0 to 100, 100 to 1,000, 1,000 to 25,000, 25 to 100,000. Same exact input, But the output became more successful over time because birds of a feather flock together. If somebody comments on your post out of the blue with 100 followers, maybe there's a 1 in 10 chance that you follow them. But if somebody comments on your post with 100,000 followers and you see they have an active community, there's like a 90% chance you're going to follow them. And so that same activity that I was doing just became more efficient over time. And that's the original way that I built my community. Never, hey, follow me. Always just genuine comments. And then number two, I think it's important to increase the likelihood that people follow you at the beginning. And one of the best ways to do that, other than providing value, is to borrow credibility. So my favorite way to borrow credibility was with my podcast, interviewing big names, people that other people recognized. And I wanted to show my audience that I was collaborating with these people so that when they clicked on my profile, like let's say I search hashtag Grant Cardone, I comment on a bunch of Grant, you know, posts where people are posting the 10X rule or they just went to a growth con or something like that. And then they click on my profile and they see, you know, a pinned post where Grant and I are chatting on a podcast, like the likelihood that they follow me skyrockets. And so I was very intentional about working with the biggest names in my space, Robert Greene, Ryan Holiday, Grant Cardone, Robin Charm, all these people, providing them value by creating cool content, distributing it. And that also helped me grow my audience. So those are some growth strategies. Any questions on those, or do you want me to pivot over to like brand integrity?
Yeah, I think that it's, I think that you should write your next book on this. Honestly, I think that similarly to how we were talking about earlier in the podcast, measuring, I think that for a lot of people, they just don't know how to go about this kind of thing. So it's really helpful for a lot of people, whether they want to write a book or whether they are an at-home chef and just want to grow their following there. I think that these are really tactical pieces of advice. So I appreciate it. And I will say that, like, maybe I shouldn't do this, but I then went to your Instagram page after, was it James reached out? Mm-hmm. And I said, oh, these guys are active and they have a community, which made it easier for me to say yes. So yeah, I think that that's, you know, you're putting in that kind of work to talk to people, and it pays off. Yeah, regarding brand brand integrity and just knowing what your values are, I would love to hear that. I heard a good quote from, I was talking to a girl in LA, and we were talking about plastic surgery and how prevalent plastic surgery in LA is and how often women will go too far with their plastic surgery and they will end up 5 years later looking nothing like how they looked naturally. And it's just a wild thing to witness, because to a lot of people around them, they no longer look good. They looked better natural. And the girl I was talking to said, they just forgot where they started. And I think that the same goes for so many projects. You just forget where you started, and then all of a sudden you can end up far down the road looking unrecognizable to yourself.
Yeah, I think so too. I think defining a purpose, defining a mission for your brand, defining a set of core values, those are all fundamentals. And if you can start to filter your decision-making through your mission, your purpose, your core values, you'll always be reconnected to that original vision. So document it, reference it as often as possible. I think you'll be in a better place. So with book thinkers, I mean, when I first started, I was doing 10-minute book reviews. And then the platforms started to change and they got shorter, and you had to create shorter and shorter and shorter content. And then in order to compete with all the other book pages that started popping up, there were all these really interesting trends that I hated. And I started to experiment with them. And then I would realize I'm not providing value. I'm just trying to be catchy. I'm just trying to get followers. But my purpose for this brand is to spread the positive power of personal development books and to help people take action, to remind them that the right book at the right time can change their life. And every time I would get away from that for the sake of getting more attention, I would just kind of revert back to that core mission, make sure that I didn't lose my followers. So for instance, nowadays, when you're scrolling through the world of Bookstagram, you'll see a lot of things that say, you know, 10 books to 10x your income. Well, that person never 10x'd their income, right? They're just trying to be catchy and they're just trying to leverage like everybody's desperate attempt to make more money. And so anytime we flirted with something like that, we would revert back to no, let's be based in truth. Let's remind ourselves of our core values. Let's not exaggerate and set bad expectations for the potential follower. And you're right. I mean, it happens in music all the time. Somebody makes a slightly different song. It takes off. They change their whole brand just to be around pop music or whatever takes off. And their original followers hate them. Like I've seen that happen time and time again on social media. And so for us, it's always a balance of providing value, but also generating additional attention. And it's a fine line. If you go too far on either side of that spectrum, you'll get killed. And so social media is volatile, but just filter your decision-making through your core values and your original purpose, and you'll be fine.
We've been going for just under an hour. Is there any last thoughts? Are there any last thoughts that you want to leave our lovely listeners with?
Yes. One more thought about how important these books are. So many of us think that the problems we're dealing with are unique to us. We think that our human experience is unique, our suffering is unique, our problems are unique, but that couldn't be further from the truth, farther from the truth. The fact is, 100 billion people have lived before us. Millions of them have written books, and hundreds of those books provide a solution to the problem you're currently facing. And so instead of suffering with the same pain on a daily basis for the next 30 years, which by the way, follow the math, that's 11,000 times. Spend a few hours and $20, find a book that can help you overcome that problem, implement it effectively, and watch your problems go away. And I just can't stress this enough. Life does not have to be so hard. We don't have to suffer so much. The solutions exist. Millions and millions of people have detailed them for us. So you just have to spend a little bit of time serving your future self, solving these problems, or reading these books, improving your life. It doesn't have to be so hard. Like, I just want to tell that to everybody.
And I just want to tell everyone that you're still going to die.
Yes, you are. And in fact, I have Memento Mori, remember you're going to die, tattooed on my chest as a daily reminder.
But you can read a hell of a lot of good books until that day happens, whenever it might be. Nick, thank you so much for your time. Where can people buy your book? Where can people learn more about what you do?
One of my favorite things to do is play this like book matchmaker role and provide custom book recommendations. So if anybody in your audience wants to check us out at Book Thinkers on Instagram, DM me, tell me about a problem you have, about a skill that you want to develop. And I'll probably ask some follow-up questions, but I'll ultimately give you a book suggestion and even follow up with you in a couple of months to see if you've read it and what you thought about it. So from there, you can find links in our bio to everything that you need, our website, our author services, my book, Rise of the Reader. Make sure you grab a copy of it so that you can get more out of the books that you are reading.
Nick, thank you so much for your time.
Appreciate you, man. Thank you.
Perfect. All right. That was great, man. Well done.
Yeah. Hopefully it was different enough from all of the other conversations you're having. And, you know, it sounds like it probably was. Not too many people specialize in like this niche of a thing.
Yeah. No, it's super cool. Where are you based?
I'm in Boston. What about you?
I'm in Santa Monica.
Okay. Yeah. Well, opposite ends of the,
opposite ends of the pond. Yeah. Cool, man. Well, I know that you probably have three more podcasts today as you're in launch mode.
No more today because it's 6 p.m. here, but I appreciate it.
Yeah. Right on, man.
I'll tell you this real quick. I just hosted my first event for my authors and podcaster like partners, people who interview a lot of the authors that we represent. Mm-hmm. And it was a lot. but it went really well. And we're going to host one next year. So it'll be in LA. I'll keep you updated on it. We hosted on the front side of the Lewis Howes Summit of Greatness. So tickets to our event also include like VIP access to his. So I'll keep you in mind because you're around and you can meet a lot of the, you know, we'll probably have over 100 authors there. So you can meet a bunch of cool people in person.
Cool. Yeah, I would love to. Sounds like a great thing you're doing, and look forward to reading the book.
Yeah, sounds good. By the way, last time I was in, actually, never mind. That was Huntington Beach. I was going to say, I went to the U.S. Surf Open, you're a surfer, back in like 2013. Mm. It was in Huntington Beach. So maybe we bumped into each other
close,
there at the same time.
Close by. Yes, I've surfed Huntington often. All right, man. Enjoy your dinner, and I'll talk to you later, and I'll release. So just to double check, anytime in November, when's best to release this?
The closer to November 1st, the better.
Got it.
And I'm going to flip you a link. If you're up for it and if you appreciate it, the book's available for pre-order now, and every copy counts, man. So,
all right.
$13 for the paperback.
Easy.
I'm going to email you a link to it. All right, man. Appreciate you. I'll let you go. Enjoy the rest of your day.
See you, Nick. Bye.
Bye.
That's our show. Before you head off into your day, you can go to tierman.substack.com to get my newsletter, my articles, thoughts, ramblings. If you want to hear more from me, tierman.substack.com is the place to be. That's it for now. Thank you so much for tuning in. Get out in the water, whatever body of water is closest to you, lake, river, bathtub, or ocean. I promise it will make your day better. See you soon.